Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast.com, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today. My name's Adrian from Sofeast, and I'm joined by our CEO, Renaud Angerin. Today we're going to be having a bit of a special podcast about the coronavirus, but with a manufacturing slant to it. So we're going to introduce what the situation is and look at some of the items that people are trying to buy in terms of medical supplies to deal with the outbreak, and also get some tips from Renaud for importers to help you to import the medical supplies you need safely and get a good result. So Renaud, could you give us a little introduction into the situation as you see it at the moment?
Hey, Adrian. Hi, everybody. So at the moment in China, manufacturing is back in full gear, pretty much. At the same time, a lot of buyers in the West have postponed shipments, have canceled orders because the stores are closed, there's lower demand, which means a lot of factories are less busy than they normally are at this period of the year. And obviously what everybody is talking about everywhere is PPE, right? Personal protective equipment. So China, in end of January and all throughout February, hurried up to make as much PPE as possible for their population. That includes mostly face masks, okay, and a lot of detergent and sanitizers and things like that. And at that time, they imported as much as they could from other countries, depleting the everybody's inventories in Europe, in the US, and so on. And they made it impossible to export this PPE. It was forbidden. The government was buying it from all the factories making it. So at that time, a lot of factories started to pivot and say, okay, let's buy 1 to 3 lines to make masks. Or, hey, we have some cut and sew operations. Let's start to do some medical gowns. Let's start to make maybe some hazmat suits and so on. Okay. So production capacity started to go up that way. And then when things started to get better in China and they opened up export again, then demand really picked up from a lot of other countries. South Korea, Iran, Italy, and then like the whole world now is really scared of what's going on, and they're trying to get some stock back with very, very intense pressure, which has led to a totally unprecedented situation, at least in my memory, where it's a very unstructured market where demand has shot up, 20 times maybe. A lot of new market entrants rushed onto these businesses, making masks, making goggles, making all kinds of things, hand detergent and even ventilators and so on. And right now, okay, it's been very hot for already more than 3 weeks, very hot, with a lot of people looking for manufacturers of these products, and also a lot of people jumping in, either pivoting their existing factory to make more of these products, or to start making some of these products, usually new factories being created to make these, and also a lot of brokers who are trying to make a buck mostly. Okay, usually most of them, from what I have seen, are not really trying to help. They're just trying to make a buck. Obviously, there's a number of them trying to help. So basically, the sourcing, they have to make supply and demand meet at some point. Okay, so that's the situation right now. Everybody is very euphoric in the short term here in China, but a little bit worried about the midterm, where it really hits them, that very serious recession coming from North America, from Europe, and from other countries, which means much lower demand for their manufacturing products in general. So everybody's rushing. Everybody's trying to make as much profit as they can, to put as much cash as possible aside before the winter is coming, basically. So that's why you see a lot of these short-term behaviors, which, rationally sort of makes sense. Again, they have to stash a lot of cash aside for winter that's probably coming, but also it's one-off transactions mostly. They were not dealing with these buyers before. They probably will never deal with them again in the future. So why care? That's sort of the situation these days.
Okay. I think that sounds a bit worrying in terms of risk, because you're talking about products which could potentially save somebody's life. So when the market seems so wild, and I've heard it described to the Wild West, you know, what can importers be facing right now when it comes to risks? Is there anything that the China government have done to actually improve the chances of getting safe products?
You're right. It's extremely risky. That's what lawyers, what QA agencies and others are telling their clients. Very high risk. So there's already been a number of highly publicized quality issues. Okay, the Czech Republic, the Dutch, the Spanish, and now it's happening in the US. There's several cases of PPE products or test kits or similar products that were purchased from China and are entirely seen as unfit to fill their purpose. And it's been very bad publicity for made in China in general and for the Chinese government, which is attacked from all sides, it seems, these days. So they're taking it quite seriously. Beijing is really worried about their image. So yes, they have taken measures. For all of March, it was pretty much open bar. Anything could happen. And then end of March, they said, well, this is really not good. So the Chinese government implemented a few restrictions that went into effect on April 1st. I'm not going to go into the details, but basically, if you want to export this product to another country, you have to be authorized to make it in China and sell it in China first. Then you can export it. Okay, so this has prevented a number of companies from exporting directly in their name. Now, it doesn't mean it prevented them from exporting. There's a lot of, you know, reselling, let's say, in the names of other manufacturers. But it pushed a number of these new operations a little bit on the side. And then, when was that? On Friday of last week, was it the 11th or the 10th? They implemented something new, and it was really, it came out of the blue. Some manufacturers told us, then some freight forwarders also told us something had changed. And the customs, so that the CIQ or AQSIQ administration, which is basically the Chinese customs, when a company is processing the export documentation before shipping some goods out, if these goods are in the general category of, you know, the mask, the gloves, the gowns, and so on, there is a special procedure. And some people from the customs, the Chinese customs, would actually come to the factory to see the product and to look also at the facility itself. Again, I'm not going into the details here, but that's the general idea. And if the product is labeled as medical on the documents that they see, then the manufacturer has to have the license in China, the license to make medical products. Okay. This has also prevented a number of companies from exporting directly, and it has put also more pressure on the bigger manufacturers that are authorized. It's a little bit harder for them to just resell products made from other factories. Of course, it still happens, and a lot of things are still shipped, you know, through different kinds of loopholes, but people are a little bit more careful now. Okay, it has put a little bit of sanity back into the process, a little bit more control. Now, the problem with that is that the buyers are getting even more desperate. So some of them are really buying without any consideration, any type of due diligence, and taking very high risks. And the problem is that these people, some of them are moving hundreds of millions of masks, very large quantities, and then they get them in their country, and then they find people to resell to. Okay, once it's in the country, they sell it easily. There's a lot of people calling them every day. If they say, I have 50 million masks in my warehouse, I mean, they sell it within 1 or 2 days if they want, with a nice profit often. Okay, so you have these people on the market siphoning a lot of the capacity, a lot of the products. They're buying sort of with their eyes closed, and obviously some of them are getting scammed. A lot of this product is non-conformant to the regulations of the countries where they're sold. But the crazy thing is there's no time to do any laboratory testing. We've contacted a few testing labs, and their medical labs are very busy these days, obviously, you know, and they don't have a lot of equipment to test, for example, the bacteria filtration efficiency of face masks, because usually they don't do a lot of this. So it's already busy with the certification work of the new entrants. So the new factories that are coming on the markets are taking up this capacity. They pay for certification. The testing labs are happy because it makes them good money. They make more money on certification than on one-off testings, testing jobs. So for testings, it's weeks and weeks and weeks of lead times, and it's not cheap. Okay, and sometimes they don't even respond to you. I just want to test these respirators to EN149. And then you wait for a response and they never go back to you, you know. So everybody's buying stuff that basically they're not checking. They don't know really what they're buying. Because obviously, there's a lot of tension on the room. Some of the materials that go into these PPEs are on short supply. Okay, the fabric for the hazmat suits, the filtering material for the masks. These are examples of materials that are on short supply on the market. The manufacturers making that cannot 10x their production capacity in a couple of months. So they have 2x, 3x, 4x, but it's still short of what the market needs. So, hey, guess what? There's fake stuff, you know, fake filtering material, fake hazmat fabric, and so on. And what happens is it's not conformed to the regulations. It looks sort of the same. It feels a little bit the same, not really, but a little bit. So the non-discerning buyer cannot make the difference, right? So there's a lot of bad products that is getting shipped. That's why I'm afraid of very, very, very high visibility and high impact recalls in the next few weeks of all these products that are made without any due diligence, without any control on the ground. Okay, so that's sort of some of the risks that we see. Yes.
Absolutely. I think that it sounds like China is doing its part to help to reduce risks to an extent, maybe to save their own face too. But what are the US and EU actually doing with regards to that? Because my understanding is they've relaxed some of their regulations on importing medical products. So with this relaxation, does that open some gaps where people can bring in the wrong kind of products?
The relaxations in themselves are a good thing. For example, if you have a respirator that is not on the NIOSH standard, you can still import it into the US as long as it was certified, or even not certified, but even if you have lab test reports on that batch that come as a demonstration of their quality. That's why these KN95s, which is a Chinese standard, and GB2626 and another GB standard. That's why this KN95, for example, can be imported into the US. That's a good thing because it's really not that different from the N95, which is more than two times the price. But really, when you look at it, it's really not that different. So it's a good thing. It has allowed for more imports of masks. And same thing in the EU. There has been some relaxation of some of the rules. Okay, so I see this as a good thing because there's a very serious shortage of these products. So it allows some of this production to be used right away. Okay, I think that's a good thing. Now the problem is there are loopholes, sort of loopholes actually, that that can be exploited and that are exploited by Chinese manufacturers to get some documents. The documents are actually legitimate. Okay. Yes, we are FDA registered. Or yes, look at this document from a real notified body in the European Union for this exact product with a nice CE logo on it. So look, it really looks nice. It looks good and it's real. So if you check it with at the source, it's real. It's legitimate. They did pay for it, did the application and get it. And this has nothing to do with the relaxation. The problem is the buyers, some buyers know exactly what they're doing, but some of them know nothing. So you give them something and you show them where to check it at the source, and they're so happy. They're like, yeah, this is legitimate and it looks good. Yes. So, for example, they are FDA registered, but for a category that's called scavenger mask, it has nothing medical in it. So the FDA pre-approval is not needed. The process is much faster. So a lot of them went through this first. And then when some of the professional buyers told them, hey, guys, this is not serious. This is not the right category here. They also went through the process, the longer process, to be approved as a medical sort of mask. Okay, that's an example for the US. And same thing with the EU. There's certain notified bodies that are not actually notified bodies for personal protective equipment, for example, and they give a document that looks like a CE certificate that is not a CE certificate. I don't know if it's consultants in China. I don't know if it's salespeople from testing labs. I don't know who gave the tips to the Chinese suppliers, but they loved it because a lot of them went through this. They jumped on it with both feet. And we see a lot of these documents that really mean nothing. For example, some test report from Chinese labs. But when you check the laboratory itself, is not even accredited by CNAS, the Chinese body that accreditates the testing labs to check masks. I mean, they it's not even in their scope. For example, in Zhejiang, there is one testing lab. I'm not going to name them, but they're a textile testing lab. And then they've tested a lot of masks, but it's not in their scope. What is that worth? Very little, because there's zero oversight from the body that is supposed to oversee it. So basically, they're acting without any supervision. The problem is a lot of buyers who jumped into this market have no idea about all this. They've never been buying any kind of regulated products. I'm not even talking about medical products. They have no concept of all the regulations, all the standards that actually have to be complied with. So they don't know where to start. As long as you have thousands of buyers like this ready to send money in advance without looking at anything, why would the factories bother with the experienced buyers who really check everything, right? Who want to cross every T and dot every I? No, they want to go with easy buyers. You want to get paid fast in advance, no questions, get paid, send the goods, and next order. It's much easier, obviously, right? And this is really making the life of the serious buyers much more difficult.
Oh, I'm sure it's driving them mad, and it's adding to the overall risk for everyone else. I mean, you make a good point about the lab testing and different certifications. If somebody who's uninitiated sees, like a CE certificate, they probably perhaps might just think, oh, they've got CE certification. Oh, it must be fine then. And there's so much more to it than that. And the same with a lab test from China saying that the lab testing results are okay. Maybe they have no idea that particular lab actually doesn't even have the scope to test medical supplies. So it makes everything a lot muddier and a lot riskier. I'm not surprised that professional buyers would be pulling out their hair at the moment. And perhaps it does take a lot of the responsibility away from the manufacturers, where actually they should be held more accountable by people that are well-versed in what they should be doing. I mean, with this in mind, if somebody absolutely needs to import these types of products at the moment, what would be your top tips for them to really think about before they actually go ahead and exchange any payment?
Well, good question. A lot of people are wondering about that. So first, you know, what kind of buyer is that? If that's a government branch or a hospital system or something similar, very institutional, they have more legitimacy, let's say. It's easier for them to approach manufacturers and get a little bit more attention at the beginning. Okay, and also a lot of trading companies, because people know that, okay, they are a real buyer, and yes, it's going to be, you know, it can be millions and millions of pieces. Okay, the problem is, what are your requirements for procurement? Can you actually qualify a new supplier, send payment and all of this in advance and decide in a few days as is necessary in this market? Or do you have to go through an RFQ? Are you only going to pay with a letter of credit or with terms like 90 days later and all these kind of things? Then you're out of the market. Don't even think of going into that market. You need to find some type of middleman that will actually bridge your demand with the manufacturer's supply. And if, you know, financing is often a big one, a big problem, and different people have had different creative approaches to that, but a lot of these institutional buyers cannot buy directly. That's a problem. Okay, then I would ask, so if you can buy, you know, decide quickly, send payment in advance, really to confirm to what the market is unfortunately demanding these days. What should you do? Well, first ask for all the certificates that show, number one, that they are a real business. Number two, that they are authorized to export from China, this kind of product. And do they have any certificates in China? And number three, certificates that demonstrate that they are allowed to import into your country, okay, into whatever, Germany, the US, and so on. And if you don't know what actually applies, then you have to get that information somewhere, right? So on sophies.com, we've been building a hub page with a lot of resources, and we're adding to it little by little, and it goes over some of this. If you don't have the time to go through all this, then you need to contact people who are familiar with all of these regulations. Okay, and we do daily a number of certificate verifications for buyers, because really it opens their eyes on all kinds of red flags that they had no idea were in these documents that the supplier sent to us, right? The next thing, if it looks like everything is matching and the price seems to be in line with the market, try to be authorized to do a factory audit, okay? A lot of manufacturers, again, are very busy, have a lot of requests, and have very little patience. So if you're just buying 50,000 pieces of masks, it's probably not going to happen. But if you're buying 20 million pieces of masks, you can definitely ask to send an auditor for a day in the factory. Okay. Always remember that all of these standards, EN149, the ASTM standards that are the basis of the requirements for the FDA, NIOSH for the respirators in the US and Canada, and so on, all of these standards call for a proper quality management system, for a proper quality assurance plan. If you just look at the documents, well, you're taking risks. So it's always better to have an auditor go there and see if it's for real, right? If they really have a good quality system. Then after that, you confirm the order, you send the money. It's locked in the capacity. Their capacity is locked for you. They confirm the lead time, the shipment date, and so on. Then comes the time for product inspections. So again, if you're doing a relatively small order, it will be a final random inspection. So usually one inspector goes there for one day, check the product. Again, some of the most important properties of the product cannot be checked, right? Like the filtering efficiency, for example. So certain things cannot be checked, but some others can be checked. Is it waterproof? You know, does it fit? Is the workmanship okay? How is it packed? How is it labeled? Is it the right quantity? You know, all these kind of things can be checked on site. And that usually suppliers say, okay, they don't have a problem with that because you already paid. They know you are a serious customer. If you say it from the start, we're going to inspect, it's okay. Anyway, you've already paid at least 50%. So, you know, if things are bad, you know about it, you can block it, you can push them to do some rework, but they know that in the end, they will never accept something that's very constraining for them. Okay, but it's a good thing. You need to know what's going on, what you're buying, because the worst thing is that you deliver to your customers and then they send things back to you and say, hey, when I put this gown on, it's full of holes, or the stitching is already broken, or all kinds of things like this. So an inspection before shipment. Then if it looks good, you go ahead with the shipment. Now, okay, at the time of the inspection, if you really want to be sure that the properties of the product are really effective, you know, that, for example, a mask is filtering bacteria the way it should be and so on, the inspector can pick some samples and send them to a testing lab. Now, you will not have the results very fast, but do you want no result at all, or do you want the results, you know, 2-3 weeks later? Well, you probably still want the results, right? Except if it's really a small order. And then there's the special case of the large orders, large batches. If you're buying tens of millions of pieces, or maybe, you know, 30 million pieces per month ongoing, well, what can you do? You can have a little bit more of a budget for oversight, for supervision of what's going on. You can actually have 2 or 3 inspectors stationed there, sort of taking shifts to see what's going on, to give real-time feedback on quality, and to double-check on the exact output from that factory. Because again, one of the risks, as I mentioned, is that they resell the products made in other factories. So, and when that happens, you have zero control over anything. You have no idea what they're shipping to you, right? So, prevent that sort of supply chain fraud, right? So some people on site can minimize the risk, let's say. Okay, so these are the most common approaches for reducing the risks as you buy PPE these days.
Excellent, that's some really really helpful tips there, and I'm sure that if it's possible for buyers to carry out even 1 or 2 of those, that's going to help to reduce risks and improve the standard of the products that they're bringing in, which of course is important for medical purposes. I have a final question. So you mentioned that the capacity in China is already stretched. I'm sure that's probably true on a global scale. If buyers want to buy this kind of medical equipment, such as face masks or gowns or whatever, are there any options aside from China that they could consider?
Well, there are other places. Unfortunately, a lot of countries have made it forbidden to export different types of PPE. So, for example, there's some production in Thailand, but Thailand has made it forbidden to export already for weeks and weeks. Forget about buying it there for exporting to Europe or the US or some other places. So I've seen some productions getting started in India. But I'm not sure if they're allowed to export these days. So a question mark here. But really, what it comes down to is if you need to move volume very fast, well, as usual, that means China, unfortunately. There's not much choice outside of China, right? In 2-3 months from now, the situation might be very different. Very different because a lot of line-making masks and a lot of other equipment has been exported to other countries that want to be more self-sufficient. And then if these countries need less PPE, they will then start to export a lot. So expect some of these from, you know, Vietnam, India, Thailand, Taiwan, also from the Middle East, some places in Europe, some places in North America. Some of them are going to go very fast, some of them much slower. But I would expect the production capacity and its distribution worldwide to be quite different in 3 or 4 months. The bulk of it will still be China. That's the mammoth in this story. But there's a lot of other countries that will start to join the game, I think.
Right. Okay. So we'll keep our eyes on that one. And I think we've come to the end of the questions that we were going to answer about buying coronavirus medical supplies. For everybody listening, if you enjoy the podcast, please like it and subscribe. And for some of the points that Renaud has mentioned today, such as the hub about coronavirus supplies that we've got on Sofis.com and some of the solutions that we provide to help you, we'll include those in the show notes today. So Renaud, thank you for your time. Thank you for your thoughts on helping buyers navigate the coronavirus crisis.
Great. Well, thanks, Adrian.
And we'll see everybody soon, and stay safe out there. Thank you.
Thank you.